Hi, this is Dan Miller, and you're listening to 48 Days to the Work You Love. Hey, coming to you from Nashville, Tennessee, actually just south of there in Franklin. It's a beautiful day out here. We live out in the country, and this is where I do all my work and writing and talking. So it's just another gorgeous day. I hope it is where you are as well. Now, every week, we help you roll into your work week talking about the work you love. And if you're not thrilled about going to work you love tomorrow morning or what you went to this morning, just stay with us. We're here to help you plan your work around the life you want. Yes, I know our American motto is to plan your work around your life around your work. But why would you want to do that? It's your life that matters. You know, your work is simply one tool for a successful life. Now, a lot of times people think because I focus on work so much that that is the most important thing, that everything else in your life ought to just subject itself to the work. No, I really don't believe that. Work is something you figure out after you determine what success in your life looks like. So we'll be talking about some of those principles today as well. But for the next 48 minutes, we're going to be looking at turning your creative passions into businesses that can make incredible income. We'll be looking at how to find those 87% of the jobs that are never advertised, perhaps how to craft resumes to get interviews, and how to interview in a way that makes you a top candidate. Again, if you love your work, congratulations. We want you to be one of the growing numbers who can encourage others that it really is possible. But obviously, if you hate your work or have some concerns about it, stay tuned. We're going to help brainstorm about some better alternatives. So this is 48 Days to the Work You Love, your weekly boost to joining the growing ranks of those who do love their work. Now, if you want to get a review of the weekly update of tips for finding the best opportunities, just go to our website, 48days.com. Make sure you're registered to be part of our 48 Days Readers Group. That means that you're going to get my newsletter that goes out every Tuesday morning. And in that, I've got a lot of tips and ideas for how to take advantage of the changes. You know, sometimes we feel victimized because change is unexpected or unwelcome. But I want to help you find the opportunities, find those pearls in those changes that you can turn into things that are actually work to your advantage and not to your disadvantage. Now, I'm going to go right to the questions. Again, if you are live on this call at 10 a.m. Central Time on Wednesday, September 19th, you can go ahead and just go to the website and you can see there where you can submit questions. Those come in to me in real time here. I've got those coming in as we speak. And I've got a lot of them that have come in the last couple of days. So we're going to go right into the questions that have been submitted and hope that you hear yours addressed. Now, Emmanuel from White City asked a question. What advice do you have for those who keep asking and believing for good things but continue to have disasters in their lives? Because I'm one of those people. Another question similar, right next to that from Michelle in Atlanta, who says, I was reading your newspaper titled, I Know the Secret. Could not help but wonder about all the people who try to think positive, pray daily, dive into scripture, are obedient, and try to have faith, but failure and trials keep following them. I have a few friends who keep trying to have a good attitude, trying to find work, and disaster seems to follow them. I'm experiencing them in my life with my family, and I can't find a job I enjoy, especially for creative types of people. A few of us are in an abusive marriage, and she goes on with some things that are challenging there. But the real question is, you know, the secret has been made popular, and I referenced that in a recent newsletter. And it's, can you really just want a new Mercedes sitting in your driveway and just simply ask for it? Can you just simply want a better job and just expect to get it? Well, if we relate it to things, and of course my answer is no, incidentally, apparently there's somebody on this live line with me. I'm not sure how that would have happened, but let me see if I can change that. Okay, just made a little adjustment there. I don't know how somebody would have gotten on this line, but anyway, we just took care of that so we don't hear the outside line there. Now, in The Secret, which has been very popularized, obviously, with the movie and then the book, it proclaims that you just simply ask, and if you ask and believe hard enough, you just sit back and receive. Well, I think that's a pretty simplistic formula, and I don't see that working in reality. Now, there's some principles in that that I think are valid, and I think positive expectation or positive mental attitude and all those things we've heard for years and years and years are really good things. mean, I would certainly rather anticipate good things than bad things, because I find that the anticipation does, in fact, lead to good things. But it's not just a simple matter of just thinking positive thoughts. We have to take something. If we took, as an example, if you want better health, well, what are some things that you could possibly do to promote better physical health? Well, there are some real clear things you could do. And you would eat better. You would have better nutrition. You would exercise more. You would go to bed earlier and get better rest, perhaps. Remove stress in your life. There are all kinds of things that you could do. And I find that that's pretty much the process in any area of life. So if you want better results, if you want more success in a job, what are you doing? Have you done an up-to-date resume that really presents you well? Have you targeted companies there where you would be a potential match? Do you know how to do an excellent job search? Are you making sure that you interview well, that in the first 3 to 5 minutes, do you really come across with enthusiasm and energy like people are looking for? I mean, those are the kind of things that are going to lead to better results in your job. Take each area like that. In 48 Days to the Work You Love, I talk about 7 different areas of life where you should be looking for success, where you should be able to identify what does success look like. So in each of those areas, identify what are the things I can do today that will be making deposits of success that I want to see evidence here. If it's in relationships, if you're in a struggling marriage, I mean, that's a legitimate area, but you don't just hope for something better or just hope that things will change. What is it that you can do? I mean, I have been married for a very long time. Joanne and I are just getting ready. In March, we'll celebrate our 40th wedding anniversary. We got married very young, and it's been a wonderful, exciting journey together. But we have never taken it for granted. We do things that let each other know that we still respect each other and still have a growing love for each other. Joanne is actually out of town right now, and before she went, I snuck in her suitcase about 10 little love notes in her suitcase that she has discovered all week long. She calls me, oh, I found another one of your notes. Just those little kind of things, you know, that I still do. Why do I do that after 40 years? I mean, I don't think she's going anywhere. I certainly am not. But I still do that to keep that relationship alive. We still have Friday nights as date night. Now, that's a special time. There's not a week that goes by that I don't have somebody contact me and tell me, I'm going to be in Nashville. I'm flying in from out of town. I really need to see you. Or I get a call, gee, we're going to have a committee meeting. We really need you there. And it happens to fall on a Friday night. I simply look at my schedule and say, I'm sorry, I already have a commitment. That commitment is date night with my wife. Now, that creates what Stephen Covey in 7 Habits of the Highly Effective People would call emotional deposits. So I'm making emotional deposits in the relationship that is my marriage. Now, I do that in any relationship that I really want to flourish and be strong. But I do that in other areas as well. So if I want to increase my financial assets, I look at what are the things that I can do. Can I decrease spending? What are the opportunities where I can increase income? But I take a very active role in participating in God's providence and fate and luck and anything you want to put in that category. But I take a very active part, and I think that you can do the same thing. So if there are bad things that are happening to you and seem to be continuing, look at what are you doing that perhaps makes those bad things too easy to happen. You know, are you anticipating bad things? You know, do you get up in the morning fully confident that there's going to be a traffic jam, you're going to be late to work, and the boss hates you? I mean, those things do have a way of being their own reality. I do believe that our expectations become our own reality. Now, this is a very, very deep, complicated topic, and we can only do a surface touch on it. I mean, there are certainly other things. If you go to our website, you'll find other things that deal with that. I have a little book that we make available in any of our packages or by itself called The Rudder of the Day, and it's just little positive tips for how to start the workday so that you really do start out doing the best that you can to make it a great day every day. Now, I do that all the time. I'm one of these glass-half-full kind of guys. I always anticipate the good. And you know what? A whole lot of good things happen to me. It's very rare that I have something that I really think is bad that happens to me. Now, do I ever struggle with physical things or challenges in relationships or challenges in business? Absolutely. But I still expect at the end of the day to have made strides forward up that ladder of success because I'm so clear on what it is that I'm moving toward. And I want you to be able to do the same. We also have a goals setting process that I'd be happy to I should have checked, but I think that's available as an autoresponder, meaning if you just simply send an email to goals@48days.com, you automatically get back that format, that's process. It's about a 12-page document that you'll get that can help you go through and identify what do you want to have in place. Because if you are clear on what you want, then it'll become more clear to you what you can do to make those deposits of success moving in that direction. Now, I've got several questions that relate to writing. Dan, I've just completed writing an instruction book for pianists called Between the Lines. It's for pianists who already read traditional music notation but desire to learn chords and contemporary rhythm styles. There are 176 pages of his instructions. This is from Dean in Nashville. That goes through the things that he's done. He's written an instruction book, and he's wondering how to print this, how to publish this, how to get this out there. I need to significantly reduce printing costs from what I've found so far. I already have a website. Well, those are great things to do. If you have a printing process or something in print that you want to publish and get out there, well, let me add a couple other questions here that seem to relate to this, just scanning over questions that are coming in here. As a result of your book, I've made several positive changes in my life this year. One of these is uncovering a lifelong desire to write a book. I'm currently underway in this project, working on a book about the daily events in our family of 10. What steps do I need to take to get my book published? Are self-publishing sites the way to go on this? Another one from Mr. P. says, I'm looking into writing a small book for high school and college students. Please advise on how I can get it started. Okay? Now, these questions address some really legitimate steps. Obviously, if you want to write, get clear on what it is you would write about. Don't just decide to be a writer and so you write on any topic. That doesn't work well. Good writers sell a lot of their products because they're passionate about the topic that they're writing about. So make sure you align it, just like anything that I talk about, whether it's a job you're going to seek or a business you're going to start, whatever it is, or if it's something you're going to write, make sure that it is an expression of everything that you care about, something that you are extremely passionate about. So start with that. Now, once you've done that, then the writing itself is one small part of the process. Now, let me put this in perspective. Many years ago, I was talking with my dear friend Mark Victor Hansen, who you recognize as co-author of Chicken Soup for the Soul series, where they've sold now over 100 million copies of those books. He says, Dan, everybody wants to write a book. And I tell him this. He says, write your book. Now you're 10% finished. 90% is positioning, pricing, marketing, promoting. What are you going to do to get people to want what you have, to pay dollars for that? That's where you really need to spend a lot of time. Now, if you don't do that well, certainly you can align with some other individuals, experts in those areas, and perhaps help yourself. Getting with a publisher is one option that should be explored, but certainly not the only one. Frankly, it's extremely difficult to get with a major publisher. It's one of these catch-22s. It's like a kid who graduates from college, goes out in the job search and says, well, nobody will hire me because I don't have any experience. How am I going to get experience if no one will hire me? Well, it's somewhat the same in the publishing arena. Publishers don't look with favor at first-time authors. Agents, very good agents, my agent that I use, will not talk to first-time publishers. So, again, it seems to be a catch-22, but that shouldn't prevent you from starting anyway. You can do a proposal, and we have free worksheets on doing book proposals. If you just shoot a note to askdan@48days.com, I should set that up as an autoresponder as well, and we'll have that available on our website. I'll make a note of that so you can just go there and find it. But how to write a book proposal. So you ought to know how to do that. if you're going to approach a publisher, what they want is not a completed manuscript, unless it's going to be fiction. That's a little different. But if you're writing self-help or instructional things like these readers are asking questions about, you don't even want to write a complete manuscript. That is not what a publisher wants to see. They want to see a proposal. The proposal will tell about you. Why are you an expert in this area? What's already been done in the marketplace? What are other competitive products that have already been done, and why is yours needed? Why is yours different or better? And then it'll go through, what is your book going to have? Have a synopsis of it, maybe chapter outline, and maybe one chapter. That's what a proposal looks like. Now, you can send that out yourself. You don't need to have an agent to do that. You can find agents easily by just going on the Internet and looking, and you'll get a whole lot of agents. You should be able to see what they focus on, what they care about, and focus your proposal toward an agent that really cares about the particular topic you're writing about. But you can go ahead and go to publishers. There's no problem in doing that. You can select. I did that initially where I selected about 30 or 40 publishers and simply sent my material to them, got back all their rejection letters, a couple little nibbles, but nothing. And I elected just to go ahead and publish the materials I had anyway. Now, I started with those original 48 days materials then in just a three-ring binder. They were just a loose compilation of notes from a Sunday school class I was teaching on the topic. Ultimately, I put a little cassette tape in there with it, very simply done, and we started selling those. Well, people wanted those, and people told others about those, and ultimately, because of the success of those, we sold over $2 million worth of that little three-ring binder product called 48 Days to the Work You Love before I ever talked to a publisher, a traditional publisher. Then I had a lot of weight on my side. Then I did negotiate a publishing deal for a traditional trade book and went on with that. And now my next book that's coming out in January is with Random House, the biggest publisher in the world. And they've done things like The Da Vinci Code and certainly lots of well-known Bill Clinton's new book on giving, working with the same team that worked with people, getting those books out. But it took a little success to get there, and you can do the same thing if you choose to just go ahead and self-publish your products and then have a proven track record where you do have 10,000 people who have purchased your product. That's not a big number, but that'll get the attention of a publisher, and then you can negotiate a deal. Now, a lot of this material is laid out in Write to the Bank. That's W-R-I-T-E to the Bank. That is a product on our website. It's a full teleseminar. It has audio. You can get it in a physical format, or you can get it all electronically. And I talk to people like Bonnie Slocum, who is a top-notch Los Angeles agent. I ask her what she looks for. She got Jack Canfield a $2 million advance on his last book, The Success Principles. So there are people like that I interviewed on there, and you can hear from them directly. I talked to Nanette Knopfinger, who is a New York publicist, about what she looks for in a book that she'll be willing to promote. And I used her. I paid her out of my own pocket, even after I had a publishing deal, to get promotion. What I'm looking at right now for No More Mondays is, what am I going to do personally to get promotion? How am I going to get on TV shows? How am I going to get on radio programs? How am I going to get on websites? How am I going to have a blog that gets attention, that promotes for that book? Because, frankly, I expect that 95% of what happens with even this new book with a major publishing house like Random House is going to be due to what I do. And so I'm looking for those particular components right now. And encourage any of you who are interested in writing to look very seriously at that yourself. Don't think that if you're just lucky enough to get with a major publisher that then your work is over, because that is not true. Okay, let me go to another question here. Here's one from Wayne in West Palm Beach, Florida. Dan, I'm 48 years old and stuck in a dead-end job where I'm not using my abilities or skills. I've tried getting another job for several years and have not been successful. My wife says it's too late and I'm too old to start a new career. I don't know what to do. Oh, my gosh, it makes me cringe to hear it framed in that way. 48 years old, it's too late, you're too old. My goodness, look at our work life at this point. If you are 48 years old, you could easily have another 30 or 35 years in your working lifetime. People are no longer retiring at 62. We find people are working into their 70s, sometimes because of financial necessity, but a lot of times just because they want to do something that's meaningful. We find a lot of people who retire very quickly are looking for, gee, what am I going to do? I'm tired of sitting on the front porch. I've played all the golf I want to play for the next 5 years. What can I do? And especially those people that we have the privilege of encountering who really figure this thing out about understanding their purpose and then translating that into meaningful, productive work. Guess what? The idea of retirement fades in its attractiveness. All of a sudden, people are saying, I don't care about retiring. Even if I don't need the money anymore, I want to continue doing something that I know is really productive and meaningful and fulfilling and carrying out my purpose. So anticipate working a long time. Now, if you're 48 years old and are having trouble figuring out what to do, don't think that it's too late. Don't think that you can't redirect or start a new career. In working with people, and I work with a lot of professionals, people like physicians, attorneys, dentists, pastors, who at 50 years old are saying, I don't think I'm on the right track. Can I do something else? And I tell them, absolutely. Because basically I tell people, you know, do whatever you want to for the first 45, 50 years of your life. Just get a lot of experiences. It really doesn't matter. There's not a whole lot of things that I would consider mistakes. But then at that point, if we can sit down and really clearly figure out how God has gifted you, prepared you, and positioned you, and you figure out how to translate that into meaningful work, you can go into the most productive 20 years of your life, starting at 50. Now, I really believe that. That's not just lip service or trying to make a 48-year-old Wayne feel good because he feels like he's off track. It is not too late. It's not too late. I mean, the alternative is, are you going to just keep drifting, feeling like you're doing something that really doesn't make sense or that you hate for the next 1 year, 5 years, 10 years, 15 years? Why would you do that? It's not that difficult to redirect and change. So the process is take a fresh look at who you are, what you're all about, what you have in skills and abilities, how you relate to other people, what kind of environment you're most comfortable in. See, that's the power of having a little bit of life experience. You know more about yourself. You can ask better questions, and you know enough about yourself, you can see some clear patterns emerge that you can embrace. And the third area behind skills and abilities, personality tendencies, is what I call values, dreams, and passions. Again, what have been those recurring themes and things that you're really drawn to? So with some life experience at 48 years old, you can really draw from those and maybe for the first time in your life, identify what would be work that would embrace and integrate all of these things. Then start on that. And again, I don't care. I mean, I have a 64-year-old gentleman I'm working with right now, a delightful gentleman. He came to me with this as his stated goal. He says, Dan, I've always done things that everybody else expected me to do. At 64 years old, can you help me really define my own purpose so I can spend the next 25 years doing something that's really fulfilling? Now, this is interesting because this came not from somebody who's just been drifting along at the bottom economically or at the bottom in terms of jobs. He had done some pretty illustrious things, including president of a university. So it wasn't like he was at the bottom of the barrel, but that's how he had positioned this. At 64 years old, I feel like I'm really just done what other people expected me to do. And then, as you heard, his question was, can you help me plan the next 25 years of my life? So, no, you're not too old at 48. Don't settle for anything less than figuring this out. If it is for the first time, figure it out. Get on track, by all means. Okay, here's a question from Dave. I won't give the state, but he says, hi, Dan, I walked away from a senior pastorate a year ago to relocate. Now, this is just about what I was just talking about. I walked away from a senior pastorate a year ago to relocate to the South for my wife's health without any personal or work connections. We left our work, families, and friends, sold our home, and moved. Nowhere near any retirement and firmly planted in middle age after a year's worth of applying to all kinds of jobs with no success, I've seriously hit a wall. It's been a long year, and the battle has been extremely costly in many ways. What advice would you offer on how to proceed from here? Well, great question. Now, here's somebody who was a pastor, left that for personal reasons, which are certainly legitimate, to have life balance, life success, but now he's back looking at, okay, what can I do career-wise? I would encourage you to look at what do you have as transferable areas of competence. Now, that's how I describe what is it that you do well. If you were a pastor, you certainly have specific areas of competence. Now, pastors today are expected to do a multitude of things. They're expected to be the counselor, the coach, the teacher, the preacher, to visit in hospitals, to perform weddings, to be a building contractor. The list seems to go on and on. When somebody leaves a position like that, I encourage them, let's go back and let's find the two or three things that you really did well, that you really enjoyed doing, not just that you had the ability to do, but you really enjoyed doing. So if that was speaking, presenting, encouraging, exhorting, as it's called in that context, if those were things that you did well, we'll just use that as an example. Are there companies that would utilize those skills? Absolutely. I mean, those would describe somebody who is an account rep for a product, or you could perhaps be a sales rep for a company like Thomas Nelson, a publishing house that presents spiritual and church-related materials, where you call on churches and universities and bookstores presenting the latest products. So it draws on your background, but you're using, again, those clear two or three skills that you know you really do well. But that would be one example of how to look at this. What you cannot do when you go out into the job search is simply show your history as a pastor and expect to get hired. No, you have to reposition so you don't describe just chronologically what you did, and now certainly this year of perhaps not being fully engaged in any work anywhere, you don't want to have people see that, so you don't want to just do a chronological overview of what you've done, or it'll prevent you from getting a lot of opportunities. Wipe the slate clean, construct a resume that has more of a functional focus rather than a chronological focus. That means at the very front, what you're going to show is that you create great relationships. You're great at dealing with conflict resolution. You like meeting new people. You like doing budgeting and forecasting. I mean, those are the kind of things that you ought to show at the very first part of a resume. That will eliminate you being crossed off the list because, oh, here's a preacher who's just looking for a job. No, you're a guy who does these things and you do these well. So that's the way that you reposition that. All right, here's a question from Elizabeth in Memphis. Dan, I've read 48 Days to the Work You Love and realized I can't stand the thought of going to work for someone ever again. I've also read the Career Guide for Creative and Unconventional People, which helped a little. Still can't figure out what to do to make money. I have a bachelor's in graphic design. I was recently laid off from a company for the third time. They played with my life for 6 years. I'm grateful to be no longer associated with that company, but now I'm financially strapped. I've spent the last 3 years trying to figure out what direction to go. Can you give me any pointers? I love animals and conservation, but as you know, the financial return in animal-related professions is poor. I don't care to go back to school to become a vet. All right. Now, Elizabeth has laid out multiple questions here, and they're great ones because she has been bounced around in a traditional job, laid off for the third time with the same company, doesn't want to do that anymore, can't stand the thought of going to work for anybody else again, and has played with the idea of some of these creative things, likes animals, has a degree in graphic design. But as you probably know, now this is significant, but as you probably know, the financial return in animal-related professions is poor. Really? Now, why is that true? Is that true? Is that a generality? See, those are the kind of things that you have to wipe out. If animals is a love of yours, if that is really what excites you, what gets you up in the morning, then make that your focus. See, this is where the connection with a personal passion becomes so important. I would rather help you be successful growing dandelions, if that's something that excites you, than trying to be a computer programmer just because you think there's a financial opportunity there when if that doesn't connect with your passion. Don't do that. Stay with what you care about and believe that there are opportunities there. Now, when we look at financial return in animal-related professions, if you want to, I'm working right now. I had lunch yesterday with a gentleman who is a veterinarian. He's bored out of his mind. He's frustrated. He's on call 24/7, and he's not making anywhere near the money that he ought to be making for the years and track record in his profession. We're leaving that. We're getting out of that. Yes, we're going to do something entirely different. I'd love to give you the details, but as they unfold, maybe I'll be free to share a little bit more about them. But he's leaving that because, yes, it's a very predictable business and does not have any of the characteristics that he's looking for a successful life at this point. That's a generalization because what he was doing was a very traditional application. Now, at the same time, if somebody's interested in animals, I mean, there was a couple a few years ago who loved animals. They have dogs, and they thought that it was a reasonable concern to be concerned about their dogs being blinded by the sunshine, as they were. They had the comfort of sunglasses. Their dogs didn't. Long story short, you know that where we're going with this, they developed what is known as doggles. They're sunglasses for dogs, and they've made themselves millionaires many times over because of the wild success of that one product. Now, I see that happening a lot. I mean, I have a lady who I worked with who created a little shelter to go over top of a litter box, and we looked at patent, trademark, different kind of things to address what her concerns were. We trademarked a particular unique name, and she designs beautifully done. I mean, these, her little houses, her covers, just made out of PVC pipe and fabric, are sold in high-end interior design shops all over the country and over the Internet. She's created a very, very lucrative niche just by doing one thing that came out of her love of animals. There are many opportunities to do that. So the first thing is don't just take a blanket statement and say, well, you can't make any money in animal-related professions. Sure you can. Get creative. Use those creative skills you're talking about, not just to go find a job. Sure, if you're an assistant in a vet lab, you're going to make $10 an hour. But if you take your creative skills, and you've already said that you don't even want to ever have a job for somebody, great, what a great starting point. But translate that into, okay, what could you do? What could you do to provide a service? You could provide a dog sitting service, or you could walk dogs. We were just in New York City, and we saw lots of people who get paid well for walking dogs, the people who live in those ridiculous high-rise towers but still have animals, but people walk them. And we were in Central Park, and we saw a lot of people walking dogs for other people, and they get paid well. They're like nannies to do that. Or you could take a product. You could be a distributor for a product and simply present that. You could be a distributor for information about how to care for your pet in this situation and create a little e-book on that. But there are a lot of ways to do that. I would encourage you to start there, focus on that, create a plan, do a simple business plan. What would it look like? What is that you could do? What are three or four ideas? And as you go through a business plan, narrow down, choose one, and act on that. Now, be aware, just like I was talking earlier about having books or printed material that you want to sell, having the product is just the beginning. Having even a great product, coming up with a great idea like doggles or the litter box covers. Poop tents. I couldn't remember a minute ago what we called those crazy things. Poop tents. That's what it was. It was a great play on words, and she's done a lot with that. But keep in mind that even if you come up with a great product or a great idea, that's just the beginning. Then you have to figure out, what is my marketing plan? How am I going to let people know? How am I going to get a buzz going about this so people talk about it? How am I going to get interviewed by pet magazines? Those are the things that will determine your success. You don't have to have an idea that is so unique and novel that nobody ever thought of it before. No, that's not even an issue. Just find an idea that you like, but then develop a clear business plan around that. Now, that relates to another question that I just got here. And it has to do, it's a lengthy question, but it has to do with, well, I've got an idea, but I don't want to share it with anybody because they'll steal my idea. How do I launch my business, fully get it up and running, without ever sharing the idea with anyone? Now, I've condensed the question, but that's essentially what it is. It relates to the one I just talked about here about having a pet idea, and I want to talk about this because it's so important. what I just described, what this gentleman is just describing, that he has an idea. He wants to launch the idea, get his product produced, have it all ready to go in a warehouse full of the product before he lets anybody know. That is a recipe for disaster. Don't do that. Don't ever do that. I encourage you, if you have an idea, share it with everyone. You know, with salespeople, we have what we call a three-foot rule. If they get within 3 feet of somebody, they talk about what it is they do. If you ever go to a Chamber of Commerce mixer, if you get within 3 feet of somebody who's in real estate or insurance, they're going to grab you, they're going to whip out their business card and tell you what they do. You need to do the same thing if you have a great idea. There is much more to be gained from telling other people your idea than there is risk that somebody else is going to steal your idea and do something with it. Keep in mind, people are very busy with their daily lives. They don't act on ideas even if they're good ones. And ideas, they need life to become reality. They need light and air. If you keep it in the dark, it's likely to die. Give it light and sunshine and other people's ears and eyes and noses and opinions. That's the way you refine an idea and then narrow it down to something that really is good. Now, people I know are concerned about patents and trademarks and copyrights. I put a very low priority on those things. Frankly, I usually do those much after the fact. I get an idea up and running and just go with it. If somewhere down the road we've been extremely successful, then I back into the idea of looking at patent, trademark, and copyrights. But those aren't things, that's about 2% of your challenge. Here's how I would frame it. If you have a new idea for an invention or you have a product, I would consider about 2% of your challenge is protecting that idea so no one else will steal it. 2%. 8% is determining if people really want it. Is there a need, a desire for what it is that you have that you're going to spring on a waiting world? And then we're back to 90%. Okay, how are you going to market, position, price, promote that product or that idea? So go back to that. Okay, let's go to another question here. Okay, boy, here's another one that relates. This is Aaliyah from New Jersey writes, "Hi, Dan. My name is Aaliyah. I'm from Trenton, New Jersey. I've been receiving your newsletter for a year now, and it's very inspiring. My question is this. I have bouts of inspiration that often lead to creations of ideas and songs. I call myself a visionary. I will write the ideas and songs down. I know what I want in life, and I see that the Creator has given me the power to change my situation. The thing is the space in between seeing it and doing it. Please help. What can I do to keep my inspiration alive and move forward to see these things come to pass?" Wow, great question. It relates to what we were just talking about there again. Having the idea is a small part. Having a great idea is a small part. Really, I hate to break your bubble, but ideas are a dime a dozen. They really are. Having an idea doesn't put money in anybody's pocket. It's only the person who creates a clear plan of action with that idea that's going to benefit from it. And that's the only thing that's going to help others benefit from it or change the world, change your finances. You got to do something with it. So don't put too much value on just having the inspiration or the idea or being a visionary. Those things are great. You start with that, but you've got to create a plan of action. So if you are writing ideas and songs down and not doing anything, just recognize that's your starting point. Put yourself on a timeline. Create your own deadlines. You may say that we have 90 days until the beginning of a new year. 90 days is a great period of time to accomplish anything. And obviously, I use 48 days a lot, and there's reasons for that. 48 days is enough time to identify your current situation, to get the advice and opinion of other people, to explore what your alternatives are, to make a list of those, then narrow down to three or four, explore a little deeper, choose the best one, and act. Now, that really is a process. So whatever timeline you use, go through those steps so you really do get to the part where you act, because life happens, And I talk to people every day who say, I had this great idea 3 years ago, and now I just saw somebody who actually did it. And my question is, why didn't you do something? Well, I was just busy, you know, I was caught up in things I was doing, didn't really have the time. Okay, if you didn't have the time, then nothing's going to happen. But if it's important to you, I tell people all the time, if you can carve out 4 or 5 hours a week, 4 or 5 hours a week, not a day, a week, can you do that? Absolutely. I guarantee you, if you stop watching Seinfeld reruns or simply spend a Saturday morning. I mean, I know that Saturdays are free days and you deserve a break, but if you really want to transition out of what you're doing into something better, what could you do if you spend Saturday mornings for the next 90 days? You would be amazed at the progress you could make at fully developing a business plan, fully doing a job search, getting new training to position yourself with new marketable skills. All those things you can accomplish in a 90-day period if you spend 4 to 5 hours a week. Now, I still do that a lot. I'm very project-driven, so I have specific things that I'm working on. Right now, as an example, the house is very quiet. There's nobody around. My wife is out of town for a week down at Hilton Head Island, just spending time in the sun and visiting friends. It would seem that I would have just uninterrupted free time, which I do, but I have accomplished some major projects during this time where I'm totally alone, totally isolated, including Saturday, all day Saturday. I rewarded myself at about 6 o'clock Saturday evening to get out, went for a ride for a little bit. But that was it, because I'm working on a project right now. I've got a deadline in place that's going to launch some things for me in January, about 90 days from now, that are going to absolutely transform what my 2008 looks like. I know that. I'm very clear on what's happened. The products are already produced. Now I'm simply working on how are we going to launch these things. So I invest that time because it is something that's important to me. I know what it's going to do to change my future. It's more important to me than just piddling the time away or going to a ball game or watching TV. So I carve out the time and make that happen. I think you can do the same. No matter what it is, the situation you're in, carve out that 4 or 5 hours a week, and it'll transform your success if you create a plan of action in that period of time. Okay, another question here. Chris asked, could you give me some tips for negotiating a job offer? I'm in a job I like now, okay, but I am to receive an offer for a new job in the next few days. Okay, great. Great timing. If they are offering you a position, that is when you are in a position to negotiate, not before. Now, a lot of people think, well, gee, I have to ask for $80,000 a year before I ever get a job offer or before I even know if I want the job. Don't do that. You don't want to do that. I mean, what you want to do is make sure you want them, make sure they want you. Only then are you in a position to negotiate. So they're going to offer Chris a new job in the next few days. That's a great time. And even if it's a company that he's been working for already, they come in with a new job offer and they say, gee, we know you've been making $46,000. In this position, you'll be making $48,000. And they assume you should be grateful for the $2,000 a year increase. You should be prepared, having done your homework, having known the company history, and being clear on what this new position involves. You should be very clear where you may, in fact, need to say, I appreciate that. I love being here and look forward to a long history with the company. Based on my understanding of the responsibilities, I would see that more in the $56,000 to $57,000 range. Is that still within your budget? Now, what you've done is simply ask a very professional question. There's nothing antagonistic. You're not looking for a win-lose situation. You want everybody to win. But if you really do understand that this position should put you in that category, and you can check things like websites like salary.com is the favorite one of mine. There are others, but that's a quick one where you can put in job duties. You can put in your areas of competence. You can put in your zip code, and it'll give you a range of what that position ought to pay. So you ought to know that in advance. A lot of times in working for the same company for a long period of time, people end up being underemployed, meaning at least undercompensated, meaning that a company can continue to give a 3 or 4% annual increase and think that you ought to be comfortable with that and happy about that, where you may, after having been with a company for 10 years and doing a market search or doing a job search, discover that you're really $10,000 under the market for what your skills should be compensated for. Well, when you do a job change, even within the new company, the same company, that's a great time to be very aware of that. So it depends on you. Do your homework. Find out what other people in that position are being paid. Find out what other people in that industry are being paid in other companies, and go in with that and discuss it. Now, when you ask for more in a negotiating situation, don't think that it's going to rock the boat. Gee, that's going to blow your chances. They're just going to say, oh, nope, I guess we don't want you after all. We'll go to candidate B on the list. No, if they've invested the time and energy to know that you're the person that they want, they are going to be very open to negotiating. And I find a lot of people leave money on the table simply because they did not ask for it. So make sure that you do ask for it. Now, I have hundreds of questions, and again, I apologize. In the format that we use, there's no way to possibly answer everything. All I can do is select 8 or 10 questions to respond to in this 48-minute podcast that we do. Please feel free to continue submitting your questions. We try to answer a lot of those outside of the podcast itself as well. A lot of those can be addressed by information sites or articles that we already have on our website. We've got over 300 articles on our website that maybe we can direct you to, so feel free to do that. But I just have a couple more minutes here. There's a couple other things that I want to address in today's broadcast here. Here's a great question. This is from Dwayne in Oklahoma. The rapid changes in business and the economy are overwhelming. Fewer and fewer jobs pay the rising cost of living anymore, especially with high housing costs significantly disproportionate now to income. How do we research what pays in the we can afford to live on range and adapt our skills to fit? And he indicates he needs about $65,000 a year. Now, this is a circular question, because, yes, cost of living are going up. We've had inflation. A lot of things have changed. And if you've determined that $65,000 is what you need to live on, that's wonderful. However, it's your challenge then to provide services that would provide that kind of compensation. I mean, you can't go to McDonald's and say, look, I've got a $1,200 a month house payment, I got a $350 a month car payment, I've got three kids, you know, approaching college, I need $65,000. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what your needs are. It has nothing to do with what the compensation is. That position is going to pay you, you know, $10 an hour or something in that category, no matter what your needs are. So be very clear, your needs have nothing to do with how you're compensated. So you have to simply identify what is it that you could do that would merit compensation of $65 an hour. Now let's break this down a little bit. $65,000 an hour, let's see, that's roughly going to be $32 an hour that you would need to make if we base it on a 40-hour week. So what is it that you could do that would merit $30 an hour? Okay, now, you know, a graphic designer in a salaried position, a lot of them aren't going to make that much. In a freelance position, sure. Maybe this is an example that we can kind of break down for this. A graphic designer may make $15 an hour in a salaried position. But if that person decides to do freelance graphic designing, do designing for five companies that aren't large enough to use his or her services full-time but could use that person one day a week, they may be able to charge $40 an hour. That would be a pretty typical kind of transition. So that's one example of how to approach this. If you're in a job where you're being paid $15 an hour and you want to double your income, it may not be possible to do that by just moving up the corporate ladder. You may need to change the work model meaning that instead of being a traditional employee of one company, you may need to tweak that, or you become a consultant or a freelance person or an independent contractor, contingency worker. You know, there are all kinds of terms that we're seeing come up that describe the kind of work that I'm talking about. But there are opportunities where somebody who is currently making $30,000 a year could easily go to $65,000 a year doing the same work but just simply tweaking the work model. So in this situation, it may be difficult to be paid if somebody is a computer programmer, if somebody does data input, or if they're good at customer service, or they're good at budgeting, forecasting, inventory control. I mean, I'm just pulling some things kind of off the top of my head, but those could all be positions where you may make $40,000 or $45,000 a year doing that. But to make $65,000 is probably not going to happen. It's too easy to find somebody else that'll do what I just described and pay them $40,000 or $45,000. So if your needs are $65,000, then you simply have to look at, okay, what could I do to position myself to have marketable skills where a company is going to guarantee me that, or where I could provide the skills that I have in a creative way that go outside the bounds of a traditional employee but would provide that kind of compensation, or can I start something on my own? Now, these are issues, and I love to talk about these issues because those are the issues that I have addressed in my newest book titled No More Mondays, which will be released in January of 2008. But in that, I describe this full spectrum of work models where being a traditional employee is simply one choice. Now, we are told by the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics that by the year 2010, only 50% of the American workforce will be employees. Now, that doesn't mean 50% aren't working. It means the other 50% who are working under work models that don't fit the traditional being paid by the hour, being paid by the work, guaranteed salary, 401k, and medical benefits. They're doing creative things. Now, I expand all of that, and I'll be delighted to get you all copies of No More Mondays. As soon as that becomes available, I'll have galley copies in about 2 weeks, and I'll distribute all those to our coaching network members and other people that I want to see first copies of that. But so I'll be covering that. I'm not just trying to bait the hook here by any means, but I'm just saying you need to be aware of the changing work models. So as you identify what kind of income you need to have, I support that fully. But don't think that a company is obligated to pay you more just because your needs have gone up or because you need a particular income at this particular season in your life, or because you put in so many years at the company, or because you're so many years old. None of those things really relate to how you're going to be paid. You have to provide a service. You have to provide a product. You have to do something that actually merits the kind of income that you're talking about. Now, we are out of time for this particular podcast. I'm going to bring this edition of 48 Days to the Work You Love to a close. We'll have more information about next week's program in the newsletter, which will go out on Tuesday. You can always get updates there. You can always go to our website, pick up back podcast from these productions on our website, 48days.com. You can also get there, obviously, the newsletter and a lot of other resources. Thanks for being part of our 48 Days family, and have a wonderful day.
The moderator has disconnected. The call will now end. Thank you. Please hold while we validate your conference ID. Conference ID accepted. The moderator has not yet arrived. Please wait.